Hi, I'm Carl Litke, Wisconsin State Chapter of the National Wild Turkey Federation. Another great hour of living the outdoors is now on WSCO.
From the Fast Sign Studios, more than fast, more than signs, it's Living the Outdoors with Mark Druitt, presented by Fleet Farm. Be part of the show by calling 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. Now, here's your host, Mark Druitt.
Greetings and welcome to Fleet Farm's Living the Outdoors show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druitt. Glad to have you along with us. Hey, if you want to chime in tonight, 281-1570 or 866-653-1570, or you can text or call us on the text line. It is 920-281-1570. If you don't want to talk to us on air, you can send us a text if you've got a question. And all of our guests on Living the Outdoors are brought to you by Nemus Southside Market. Visit Nemus.com for all their specials and weekly blog. Also, follow them on Facebook for the best selection of hand-cut meats and craft beers here in the city. So here we are. This coming weekend is the Learn to Hunt Turkey Hunting Program, and things are looking pretty good. And my guest tonight was supposed to be Randy, but Randy has taken ill, and we hope you're feeling better, Randy. And I've got one of my A-listers here in the studio. He's usually at the top of the list when I need somebody to come in and help out. And he's been, I guess if you're looking at it from a Saturday Night Live perspective, he'd probably have one of their special coats because he's been on the guest so many times. Carl Lidke is here tonight. Carl, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Mark.
Good. Thanks, man. I appreciate you.
No problem.
You jumping in here to help out tonight. And we're going to talk about turkey hunting. We've talked a lot about the Learn to Hunt program. We've talked about the,
black powder,
the rules and regulations coming up. I mean, now it's time to talk about turkey hunting, getting down to the grassroots of turkey hunting. And, you know, obviously you've been doing, how many years have you been turkey hunting now?
Hoo-hoo.
Didn't know there'd be a quiz, did you?
Yeah, no, over 20.
Yep.
Way over 20.
Way over 20.
So I think I only missed, the first three seasons in Wisconsin?
A long time.
Yeah, so it's a long time.
That's a long time. And, you know, when you think about it, do you remember your first turkey hunt?
Yes, very well.
Let's hear it.
First one down in Boscobel. I kid you not, how the hay fields are on top of the hills down on the river bluffs and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So we drove halfway up and parked in a parking spot on this farmer's lane going up, it was a good place to pull off and literally get out of the truck and door shut a little bit hard and, three toms sound off gobbling and right there I was hooked for life. That moment, that second, it was all over. I knew I was doing this for a long, long time.
Yeah, it's my first experience too was out in that southwestern Prairie du Chien, which is not far from Boston at all.
No, 12 miles.
And my buddies have been after me, and I'm like, nah, that doesn't do anything for me. And I've been hunting the fourth year that they had it. I started hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me how much fun it was and dragged me out there and put me in a spot they called the corn binder. It was an old corn binder that was left in the corner, and it was I didn't get a bird that year,
mm-hmm.
but the experience of like you said, hearing the turkeys gobble, and you know how it is when you're down in that area and you're on top of a ridge,
mm-hmm.
you can hear them all through that valley.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, mm-hmm. that sound just travels. You get, are you got to be kidding me? Are there that many birds in this area?
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Yeah,
it one starts, then start, then another one, then another one, then another mm-hmm. one, then another one. Then they, watching them fly down right into the field.
Mm-hmm.
And it was incredible. And it took me, I think it was 2 years before I actually shot one.
Yeah, it was me too, yeah. I didn't get one the first 2 years either.
I didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
You start moving around, you're scrunching, you feel like you're duck hunting. You don't realize how quiet you've got to be and how still you have to be. And the first one I shot was a Jake, called him right in. And let them have it off that same spot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, from that point on, I'm never going to miss.
Right.
And I never have.
Yeah, neither have I.
And back then, as you recall, It was Wednesday through Sunday.
Yep, only to hunt until noon. Yep. Then we'd take the canoes out and go float the river and shoot carp or carp and buffalo carp or you know whatever they call them.
Yeah, or hunt mushrooms or yep. shed hunt mm-hmm. or yep. find more property hunt. What was really cool is the farmer got to know us quite well, and we would go out every year. Mm-hmm. We'd help him in the fall, putting hay in the barn, or we go earlier in the spring and help them get rocks out of their they pull their wagon out. Yep. We'd load it full of rocks, and by the time you know we got to that third fourth year, that we had access to so much property some of it we never saw.
Yeah,
because mm-hmm. they've just got family. They go, okay, my brother's here, my cousin's here, you know, my aunt is here, you can go over here. And you're not talking 40 acres either.
No,
you're talking not. Hundreds
right down there. Yeah,
hundreds mm-hmm. of acres. Interesting terrain to hunt.
Yes.
You better be in good shape.
Yep. That's where I had first coyote attack one of my decoys, too, is down there.
And that happens.
Oh, yeah.
and you see some pretty interesting things because mm-hmm. it's a different, just a different contour.
Yeah, rattlesnakes.
There's snakes. There's feral hogs. There's eagles. Yep. You've got all kinds of fox. Coyotes had some hogs get out from the farmer's pen and mm-hmm. had a couple of those come running by. That's yep. That's pretty interesting.
Oh, it is,
just,
yeah.
mm-hmm. to say the least. But you know, that's where it's all started for me. And you know, I'm at that point now where you know I love to turkey hunt. I don't need to shoot one. It's nice,
mm-hmm.
you know, to get one, but. Our good friend Steve Jordan is always kind enough to, he has the last 3 years. I just texted him today and he's going to find a spot for me to hunt again. And
yeah, I was talking to him yesterday. So
yeah. And he's going to hook me up. I've got second period and you know, he's got some excellent spots. First year that after I talked to you and he mm-hmm. set me up, I shot one that year. Last year, I couldn't get on this bird. I couldn't get him to come. I think he had too many hens with him anyway, but I guess Steve said he went out there like fifth or sixth period and let him have it. So, but you know, when you talk about, you know, turkey hunting and obviously, you know, I've been doing this mentoring thing for quite a few years now. It's simplistic, but there's a lot that you kind of have to think of when you first start doing it. I mean, we can start out by, you know, the most simplest of things, which I think is the where it all starts, is scouting.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you're going to have more success if you do your scouting. No ifs, ands, or buts. Learn where they want to be, where they're coming down. You know, where they're going to roost. You know, because it changes about every 2 weeks.
It seems to, yeah.
You know, or every 6 to 10 days. You know, as the season progresses, you know they're going to, you know, also change whether it's sun or rainy out. You know, it's, but if you do that scouting and know where they want to be, your success rate goes up extremely well.
When you're talking about scouting, what are some of the things that you're going to, you know, obviously you mentioned, which is absolutely correct, they've got some centralized spots that I've discovered over the years that they like to roost in.
Yes.
But they may not end up there.
Right.
You know, they may correct. Wander somewhere else, but, you know, talk to a little bit about what cover makes for good roosting areas.
I mean, they like the taller, bigger, you know, hardwoods, but I mean, I got them in pine plantations too when they set up. So really it's what they choose for the weather condition that's coming in. And that's what you have to know as a hunter, what weather you get coming in. Because if it's rainy, they want to be out in the middle of a field because they can't hear things mm-hmm. in the woods. So they're not going to be strutting in the woods because they can't hear anything because it's too wet. So they go out in the middle of fields, gives them a chance. I mean, yeah, they may be rained on, but they really don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't bother them one bit. They can see, and we all know they got great eyesight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's their advantage. You know, on sunny days, then you're not going to see them in a field. That's where they want to be in the woods and in the shade. They like little higher knolls. Just, I mean, depending on the area that you're in any little higher knoll, they love to get up and gobble on so that their sound travels farther. You know, all these things just, you know, you start putting them together and knowing where they are, where they want to be at what time of day. I mean, how many times have you and I gone out, not even at daybreak, gone out at 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, mm-hmm. and end up shooting a bird 15, 20 minutes later?
Sure.
Because you know where they want to be. They've they broke off from their hens. They're going to want to walk to a higher spot, and they're going to let out a gobble just because they can, so they can see who's out there, who's close to them, who can they walk up on. But they're going to go to places like that. So you just want to know the lay of the land, as well as you can.
Sure, absolutely. You know, and that's 100%. You know, and that sometimes put some miles on the car, put some miles on your boots, get out, walk around. If you're hunting public ground, I'll go out and check it out.
Right.
I found a couple of places now that are now open for public hunting that weren't before. And you got to get out and walk around.
Yep.
You know, you got to put your time in. If you can, get out there at night. Try and figure out where they're roosting. And I think, to me, that's one of the key things. If you have the ability to do that, then you know where they are.
Right.
But then again, you have to be real cautious about how you try to get in on them.
Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. How many times have you gone in the morning and be too close? I mean, you look up and they're in the same tree you're leaning against.
It's great. Yes, that's happened. It's like, oh, no. And you hear something up in the branch and they're rustling around in there. And you go, oh, no, I didn't really. But, you know, I've actually seen them, you know, roost them, and then they fly to another tree.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So they may not necessarily be where you thought they were. So
right.
In your opinion, a couple of good things that you're going to want to keep in mind when you are trying to approach them that following morning.
The following morning, good things.
Are you going to try and, use the cover?
I try to use the cover as much as I can. But I also anticipate where they want to fly down to. You know, the earlier seasons, first, second, third, I tend to want to go where the sun's going to come up first.
Oh, okay.
Because they want to fly down to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on what, I got little ridges, actually pretty big ridges by my place, considering the ground that I'm on. I know they like to be on the side of the ridge. Sun's going to hit first. You know, a lot of times I can't get over there, so I have to stay on the other side. Then it's work calling them back, but they want to fly down to where that sun's going to be, they, especially in them early seasons. Later seasons, it's really patterning where they've been in the last couple of weeks.
Now, they're going to be obviously looking for, find a good area that they're feeding in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
And what are they feeding on this time of year?
They're going through the fields, picking up all the corn, soybean, all the leftover stuff. You know, snow's gone, so it's packed things down. So, there's corn laying on top, there's soybeans laying on top, millet laying on top. You know, there's a lot of things that the snow pushed down, packed dirt down. That there's seed there that comes available.
Yeah, waste grain, or they make.
Mm-hmm.
It always seemed to me this time of year that they do a lot more scratching than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And like oak flats and trying to grunt, scratch up any old acorns or.
Right.
A little early for worms and stuff, but the ground is soft now.
Yeah. After last night's thunderstorm, it should take care of a lot of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm thinking that we get some warmer days in here. I think some of those, some worms might start to show themselves it's always interesting. Or if you can find somebody, if it's dry enough and they get that field turned over, or they're working in there, they're like seagulls.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. If it's not too, but I've seen them walk through some really horrific fields that I wouldn't even think of through. But once they get that turned over and some of those worms and grubs and stuff, boy, they're in there almost immediately.
Look at some of the stuff Steve hunts. There's water to stay. And they're out there strutting. So It's fun. I've seen them come across mud fields by Steve's that, they're no different than us. Their feet gets an inch bigger every time they take a step.
Yeah, right. and I've heard a lot of people say that, they're really not acclimated to water. They won't walk through water. I'm here to tell you that they do.
Oh, yeah.
Shot one right in a bottoms, and he was walking right through the water.
Mm-hmm.
I was out walking out from hunting. And I always walked out. You remember my property that ran right through that creek bottom. Yep. And I'm like, and I always try to just keep calling while I'm walking. And I got him to gobble. And he was in some thick stuff. And it took me about an hour, but I got him to come up on that road.
Oh, yeah.
And he walked right I mean, it was, I wouldn't even want to walk in there.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I've hunted, you know, down by me when Charlie's on land. He had part of the cedar swamp. It's a 7-acre cedar swamp. I can tell you turkeys I called in, they probably walked a mile through, you know, up to their drumsticks of water. They didn't care. They walked right through it. It didn't bother them one bit.
Yeah, and when you talk about cedar thickets and stuff like that, you know, when you get these spring days like this, or you get that spring snowstorm and stuff, that's not a bad place to set up.
No, it's not. Because they go down there like every other animal for cover.
Yep, they want to get out of the wind, right, and out of the rain. And, you know, going back to what you alluded to earlier, the weather is not an issue for them. No. They do what they have to do regardless. And they are equipped. You would think at this bird, like all other birds, but they're not. I mean, they can sit in a tree for days on end. Yes, they can survive for like weeks without any food. Yep. They lose a good percentage of their body mass.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're built to survive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy, you know, that a bird that size, you know, that's why I don't think there's really a lot of mortality. I mean, I'm not a biologist or a specialist by any means, but just their survival skills and their survival set is that, you know, there just isn't a lot of them that die off. I think what kills them, and I'll get your opinion on that, is when that you get that rain and then it freezes and then snow.
Right.
And then they just can't get any food.
Yeah, they can't dig down past that ice level. The ice level is what hurts a lot of it. You know, and then the other thing is they become weak and then predator, you know.
Right.
It's you know, they may be able to find a spot, but, you know, there's times when that's happened, you know, I just take the tractor out or even a four-wheeler. Who cares? If you just break through that ice for them, just go run around and make a bunch of, you know, trails breaking that ice. It gives them something to scratch in and dig in and go for it. You know, I've also taken a tractor out there with a bucket and just dropped it below the ice level and scraped off bigger areas of old cornfields and stuff like that. So, again, they can scratch past that ice and break through it and find food.
You know, and I have to think, too, that deep, fluffy snow has to be very difficult for them to get around.
2017 we had that one?
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, because they have to get down and walk around. I mean, that's when I think they're really susceptible to predation.
Right.
You know, you've got coyotes and fox and wolves that are kind of like geared towards running on that stuff as opposed to turkeys. But we're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farm's Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. Welcome back to Fleet Farm's Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. Glad to have you along with us. Carl Lidke is my guest tonight. If you have a question or comment, 281-1570, or you can text us at 920-281-1570 or 1-866-653-1570. Keep the emails coming to livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com. And you can also follow me on Instagram. It's outdoorslivingthe. Getting a lot of interesting outdoor experiences, and we'll kind of take a side tangent here, Carl, before we get back into turkey hunting, but major ice shoves on Lake Winnebago.
Oh, yeah, I've heard, yeah.
And there's one in front of it's not in front of my home, but like four homes down, that the ice was as high as the gutters on their second story.
Oh, that don't surprise me.
Yeah, I've never, in 28 years, I've never seen anything like that high. And I want to say anywhere between 20 and 25 feet from their front picture window.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they can't see the lake.
Yep.
Never seen anything like that. But anyway, my wife and I were out for a drive, and we drove down to Asylum Bay just to see what the ice shoves looked down there. And just a huge migration of waterfall. I've never seen that amount. I'd say I estimated tens of thousands.
Wow.
Mm. Bluebills. You know, really? Everybody has been talking about the bluebill population has been decreasing. It was absolutely incredible. There's still quite a good number of them. I don't think they can get much farther than this because a lot of stuff is frozen yet.
Yeah. I know the swans last night.
Yes.
Yeah. Last night the swans were just, it was solid from 4 till I went to bed. It was like, man, how many swans we got going through.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, it was just one flock right after another.
Yeah, and we after that, then we made a trip out to, I was checking, doing some scout, turkey scouting, and got up to Navarino.
Okay.
And there was a field that, again, thousands of swans.
Yeah.
And that's really cool when you see them in those kind of numbers. And now the cranes are starting to show up in bigger numbers. So it's one of those cool things about this time of year is you start to see a lot of that stuff that you really don't see all other times of the year. I mean, cranes are always around. I mean,
a little bit off that side. You know, I travel south once a week.
Yes.
I've actually learned the month of February where all the snow geese are.
I'm listening.
I've come through the area around Effingham, Illinois, 3 years now in a row. One day, literally, I take some back roads when I get down there just to goof off. But literally, they blocked out the sky. I mean, they're right up next to the road on some of these old back gravel roads and stuff like that. But yeah, I've definitely learned where they're at.
You know, and that's the key, because if you can find some of those, because you know you've got all of these other places that are popular, like Havana,
right?
You know, and parts of Missouri and some of these other places. If you can find some of those flyways out of the way,
I found them.
Okay, we're gonna have to talk after the show. But yeah, that's and that's another one of those phenomena is the snow geese.
Yep.
I mean, people don't really understand the vast numbers of these birds.
Oh, yeah.
And what kind of destruction they pose to the environment.
I've actually got pictures I can show you.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. But anyway, when we're talking about, you know, scouting, you know, obviously finding the right areas.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're going out, you know, let's say you want to roost these birds at night. What are some of the tactics and some of the things you're going to want to do to try and find out where these birds are?
I mean, whether you're walking a property or driving up and down roads, riding bicycle up and down roads, that's my biggest thing, is just taking a bicycle up and down.
Sure.
You know, and going look. Usually a box call or an owl hooter are my two favorite.
Okay.
Peacock call works well. It screams a little bit louder and all the rest. But I do. I carry a long box because I want to reach out as far as I can. Usually that time of night when I go to roost, usually tends to be a little bit calmer. You know, the winds have died down. Everything's calming down. So you're just taking out calls that reach the farthest that they can.
And that's exactly it. We'll talk more about box calls as we get into that part of it. But yeah, going out. Owl calls seem to work, but you mentioned right in the beginning, car horns, chainsaws.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, back in the day when we started doing this, we used those portable air horns.
Yeah.
I mean,
I still carry them. Can one where you're...
The can one? That's so loud. It just like shock gobbles.
Mm-hmm.
Then they can't help themselves.
No. Yeah, no, I've used them a lot. I really have.
And it's some of those things and that, you know, you're really not scaring them. You're scaring a gobble out of them.
Right, that's it. Yeah.
Now they're giving up their
location.
Their spot. Yep. And what... I always found it to be... I learned a lot of this deer hunting, that they start to fly up as it's just getting...
Right.
Dark.
Yep.
You know, there's still enough light, but it's dark, and then you can hear them fly up. So what are your thoughts on that?
No, I agree. That's you know, and I'll do it, you know, roosting them is, you know, there's times you'll hear them on the ground. Very seldom, though. I mean, most of your roost gobbles that you get right at that last 5-10 minutes, they're pretty much in a tree already. No, and that's how you pinpoint them. So right on the ground, when it can spin and turn and stuff like that, you got a hard time pinpointing them.
Yeah.
And as the leaves come on, you know, your brush gets thick, or your greenery gets, you know, leafed out and everything. That pinpointing and that sound dampening really plays a difference.
It makes it extremely difficult.
Yeah.
Because you think they're coming from one area, but it's actually not.
Correct.
So that's the game you have to play. Now you can use the cover a lot better.
Right.
You know, early in the season, everything's like wide open. And they can see you.
Yes.
So, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier is, you know, using the terrain to your advantage so that they don't pick you up.
Right.
And when I hunted, I would always, on my own property, I could sneak the backside of the field to get in there, and they would never know, because they usually ended up on a ridge across from me. And you could just sneak in and get set up in there. And there were several times where you sit down and you hear the first one gobble, and you give them a little tree yelp, and it's like right there. And all 5 minutes into the season, you're done.
Yep. You know, mine is that they always hunt below the ridge, you know, and the ridge is so high by my place. I can sneak along it, you know, the full length of it real nice, you know, and try to figure out where they're at. But, you know, every once in a while, like, oh, man, I got to get 10 more feet. I just have to get 10 more feet because I can't see the slope going down. And then, yeah, as soon as you poke your head up over the top, you're busted because you're at eye level with them sitting in the trees down below. So in this early season.
Yeah, that's a distinct disadvantage. But, you know, I want to talk briefly about when you're out scouting now and you start these early seasons and tick protection. You know, you're not going to have a lot of mosquito issues and
but the ticks are out already.
The ticks are out. And how do you combat that?
I do try to spray down on my pants legs, especially down on the bottom. You know, usually I look at all the different long johns that say they're, you know, this proof, that proof, and everything else. But I do try to wear them. But yeah, turkey hunting, I seem to be a tick magnet. I mean, it's just, yeah, man.
Yeah, I have been using the permethrin and spraying that on the boots and your pants, because, you know, even on I will spray it on my top if I'm sitting, because they can drop on you, then walking through the grass or whatever. And if you are wearing camouflage or even black, if you're sitting in a blind, you'll never know.
Yeah, you can't.
You know, you won't know until all of a sudden you're taking a shower and you got this little mole that wasn't there before. And you know, they're carriers of numerous diseases.
Right.
So you can't be safe enough when it comes to that. So make sure, you know, if you're not aware of it, go online, Google, YouTube, find some way to get yourself educated on this, because it's as bad. Back in the early days, I never really had an issue with it. I mean, we had wood ticks, but didn't seem to be a deer tick issue.
Right.
But now it's as bad as it's ever been.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you don't want to get sick from getting bit by one of these
things. And I will say that I think the worst, best day, however you want to describe it, I think one morning I pulled off 300.
It's insane. And I mean, it looks like you walk through some kind of burrs or something, you know, and they're stuck on you. It's like, you got to be kidding me. And my old property was loaded with willows because on that creek bottom and that tall marsh grass. And all, I mean, it was just like a haven for them. But protect yourself against that by all means. Let's kind of move on to the next segment here. We're going to get as much of this as we can covered. But some guys like decoys, some guys don't like decoys. What's your take on using decoys?
If I'm in a blind, I use the decoys. Just, I had some place to throw them when I'm done. I don't have to carry them around. If I run and gun, yeah, I don't need a decoy. They're fun. I mean, I can't say I've seen them hurt. I've never seen them hurt the setup, but I have seen them stop far enough away that you can't get a shot. I take it either way. I've seen some awesome things and had some great fun using decoys and setting them up the proper way and watching what happens, just to film and play and goof off. Yeah, I've seen some amazing things. A lot of fun. Just huge amount of fun. But do I need one? No. I don't know.
It's and they have the decoy world from turkeys for turkeys. I mean, I shot my first one over one of those Feather Flex foam ones.
Yep.
And I can remember distinctly putting that on the stake It had a little grommet in the top of it, and you had to push the little thing through there. Well, one day it was so windy, I thought it was going to take off. It looked like a helicopter. I'm like, I don't think any turkeys, and this was back in my, my learning stage days. And I'm like, I don't think any turkeys are going to come in to something like that. Mm-hmm. But now they've taken it
to an extreme.
You've got Dave Smith decoys. You've got guys using like actual real toms, mounted ones.
Yep, and feathers, yep.
It's, I guess I always look at it this way. I like to use them, but it's your gig.
Right.
What you want.
It is. Exactly.
You know, and some of the, like the Avian X, you just blow them up.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You squeeze them down, stick them in your pack, and off you go.
Yep.
And they're pretty darn realistic looking. Oh, yeah. But I probably shot more turkeys using decoys than not. But the you mentioned it earlier that if they'll hang up on you.
Yep.
Especially the older birds.
You have to set them up correct.
Yeah, you've got to play that game because you've got to get them pissed off that they're going to want to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And that decoy, that Dakota decoy.
Yeah, the quarter strut.
Yeah, that quarter strut. I shot a lot of birds over that.
The quarter strut works great. Again, especially if you're a bull hunter, you better know which way you have that set up. Because that tom's only coming in one way, head on.
Head on.
Head on. He's going to be head to head. And that's where I say you really have to learn what these decoys do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a whole nother ball game in this sport is learning how to set them decoys up. Because a perfect setup, it can happen every time you put them out, but you have to learn it. It's especially when you start using any of the toms, any of the jakes, any of the quarter strut, it all makes a difference on how them birds work and the tom coming in sees them.
I know you actually gave me that decoy to use, and I shot one over it, and positioning that hen too can make a really big difference of whether. So tell the listeners if you're going to use one of those quarter struts or three quarter strut ones, how are you going to want to position that hen?
You know, the hen, I haven't had a problem positioning that hen. It's usually within 10 to 15 feet.
Okay.
And it's in the first 15 degrees of where the tom's looking, because you have to set the tom is what you have to set up correctly, because you have to get the attention of the toms you're trying to call, and they have to see him.
Mm-hmm.
And then remember, they're going to come straight in to wherever you got him facing. He can't be you in the blind because you're in the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has to be in a position that tom can come to him and come to him straight in. I mean, we talk about Steve. Steve had set up. I went over there later season and using that decoy, and I set it up to where I thought the birds came out. They came out 180 degrees the other side. And that tom walked all the way around that field. I mean, he knew the way that decoy was set up, or that tom was set up, that decoy. He walked all the way around it, way out of range, and then came into it. I mean, I still got him. But I watched him painfully for 45 minutes. But I'm just saying, you really have to pay attention to how you're using it and which way you want that bird to come in. Because if he ain't got a straight shot, he's not coming into it.
Yep. And the first one I shot when you gave me that decoy, I did exactly that. And, face him. And they pivot a little bit and they move. I had to actually stick a stick in there to keep the wind from blowing him around so he could stay facing away from me.
Right.
And I shot that turkey dead on. Went like 3 inches from his beard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what it is, because he's going to come right at him. Right. And it's funny because when they get into it, you see them and they've got red and they've got, their heads will turn all red and then they'll turn red, white, and blue. Mm-hmm. This one turned white, just pure white. I go, he's he's pissed. He's coming in. And it was, I got it all on video. It was absolutely one of the coolest experiences I've ever had. But listen, we're going to go ahead and take another break. When we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living Outdoor Show right here on The Score. Welcome back to Fleet Farms Living Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick. Thanks for tuning us in tonight. Glad to have you along. 281-1570 or text us at 920-281-1570 or 866-653-1570. And keep the emails coming to livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com. I will always do my best to get people connected in the outdoors. So we talked about decoys, and I've done everything. I've used a full strut tom. I've used a three-quarter strut, quarter strut, uprights, feeding hens, lay-down hens. You know, there is no real, you know, distinct scenario.
No.
You know, because their mood is not the same every day.
No, you know, definitely not.
And I think, in my opinion, as the season goes on a little bit, you know, they're when they tend to their hens in the morning and then they're out looking around, you know, to me, I always had better luck with a Jake and a hen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because he's like, okay, no, none of these young punks are going to be taking any of my girlfriends.
Right.
Early season, you know, having a couple of hens worked well for me as well. If for some reason they're nothing's responding, I've already walked out and taken them and just continued to call. Because now some of these birds, they're looking, they're waiting for a visual. And if that gobbler sees that hen is there, I mean, it just, especially a mature one, he's just going to stand there. And he's going to display, and he's going to gobble. And then he's going to get to that point, he's like, okay, I've had enough of this crap, and he leaves.
Right.
So
yeah, because the true game is all the hens. The reason they gobble in the mornings for all the hens to come to them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we're trying to play a little bit opposite there. So
yeah, you're trying to play to his manly, you know, urges and get him to, you know. But it's, don't be afraid to try anything.
Oh, exactly.
You know, one of my most memorable is I took a friend out hunting on my property. And we're hunting in the field, and we had the decoy out there. And we had this tom, and he just would gobble, 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 gobble. And I go, I know right where he is. He's in a little depression, and it on the backside of that, like you said, is a hump. But we couldn't see him. I go, I know exactly where he is. He's not leaving there. And I said to my friend, I said, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to pull those decoys. I'm pretty sure he saw him from where he was. I'm going to pull those decoys because he's on the ground. He can't see us. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to grab a call, and I'm going to start walking. And I walked down the road on the property and just got, you know, as it got farther and farther and farther away, I could hear him. He kept calling again, closer and closer and closer and closer. And you remember where the trout stream was?
Yep.
You crossed over the bridge there. I just about got there and boom. So, you know, sometimes you just have to step out of the proverbial turkey box and try something different.
And about the same way we do for elk hunting.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're just use their stuff against them, you know, but, you know, okay, enough on decoys. Use them if you want. If you like them, spend as much money or as least amount of money as you want. Make sure you have them with you all times. I mean, during turkey season, there's always one in my truck bouncing around or flapping around or something. Calls, you know, I know you love calls. You love decorative calls. We were talking about it before we came on the air. You're showing us pictures of calls people made at the Nationals that are just like incredibly unbelievable. But you know, we've got a couple different calls. We've got box calls. We got pot calls. We've got diaphragm calls.
Yelpers, wing bones.
Yeah, wing bones, yelpers,
scratch
push
box,
buttons. Yeah,
push buttons.
What's your favorite?
My favorite's still probably a pot call. Probably slate and ceramic. If I need to reach out a little bit, then I'll go to glass crystal.
Here, I brought some calls in here.
Yep, I seen it.
Yeah, take that one there. That's one of, look at the bottom of it. You'll probably recognize it.
Yeah, easy talker.
Yep.
So we got a double side. So, but...
And that's, you know, slate to me is slate. One of the realistic, it sounds just like them.
Very easy to use. So on the inside of this one, we've got glass.
Two distinctly different sounds.
Right. Stryker needs some work, but
that's a crappy one. I just grabbed that. I didn't grab my good ones, but Strykers make all the difference. And there's so many different kinds. There's plastic. There's all different kinds of woods.
And flared, and, yeah. It's
just, you know, pointed, and but you know, and basically the way you're using that, I can describe this to the listeners. Is you got, it's like a little bowl, a little pot.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you're just taking that Stryker and you're working against the grain. You got to kind of rough them up a little bit.
And you're going in small circles.
Small circles. Yep. You know, either do a JJ or just, I like to do just a small circle, you know, and you can do everything. You can yelp, you can
putt.
You can purr, you can do all of that stuff on there. Mm-hmm. To me, that's my favorite.
It is mine too. You know,
and it's easy to use. And you just get yourself a lanyard and hang it on your on your around your neck. That way you can drop it when you have to. Because you just use both hands.
Yes. Unfortunately, you gotta use both hands.
Yep.
And I guess on a box call you do too. You know, I guess box call is gonna be Steve's favorite. You know, he loves his box calls, but I mean box calls mostly have two sides a lot of times. You know, and this one you got set up with rubber bands. We can gobble.
And it's box calls, and you made reference to it earlier. They're loud.
Right. And the bigger the box call, I mean, this whole chamber, if we take this rubber band off that you have here, we take this whole chamber, you can see how much, I mean, I know you can't see on the radio, but there's a big, you know, 6-inch, 1-inch wide, 1.5 deep. That's the sound chamber.
Yeah.
That sound chamber is what makes that travel. So when I say I carry a long box for roosting, the longer that box is, the longer that deeper and longer that chamber is, the farther that sound carries.
And they're loud.
Yes.
And you know, there's so many different configurations too. There's different types of woods, but the way that the call is made is, it's all pretty much the same. It's got a screw on the end. It's a box, like you described, a hole in it, and a paddle on the top that's chalked.
That's chalked, yep. So, the paddle's chalked. Yep.
Yeah, and that's what gives you that sound.
Yep.
And great on windy days, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're not carrying a box call, no matter what turkey hunting you're doing, you should put one in your arsenal. You really should. Because a box call on windy days, wet days, you know, you need that sound to carry, and that's where it's going to reach. I mean, I've got one of the call makers from Missouri made me that one. The sound chamber on it's 32 inches.
That's a big one.
Mm-hmm. That's a big box call. And let me tell you, does it work?
I'll bet you. You know, if you're just out there trying to reach something far away,
especially like in Kansas and Nebraska,
yeah.
Oh yeah, that thing's sweet. I love it. It's just
and some of them are, you know, what I brought is very basic.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are extremely ornate.
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm. I mean, you know, hand carved, and you know, the cool thing about turkey hunting is you do with it what you want.
Right.
You know, you want to keep it simplistic. Go buy a cheap call. Go buy a pot call. But I think I'm with you. You have to have a box call.
Yes.
You know, it's a good locator call. Mm-hmm. You have to have a pot call of some kind. Go try them out. There's aluminum, glass, slate. They all have different
and
sounds.
And then there's combinations of, you know, because like this one here, the soundboard, what they call the soundboard, is the glass underneath this one.
Right.
So it's basically slate over glass. But when you flip it over, you got a smaller chamber, so the glass is on the inside. Now the slate becomes a soundboard. So it's glass over slate and slate over glass on this one because it's a two-sided call.
And it gives you options.
Right.
You know, you're not using the same call. I've always liked to use different calls.
Right. And if you take three different Strykers along with you, you get you now turned your two calls into six.
Yep. I carry a minimum of six Strykers all out of different woods, different configurations. Couple pot calls. I carry diaphragm calls. I'm not really good at using them, but I do like to, you know, purr with them. Because now, if he's getting close enough and you have to use that as
when you're sitting running gunning, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Get them closer. How much is the cost for any of these models?
It's a good question.
Is it relatively cheap or is it an expensive? Is it worth it to get a more expensive one?
Most of your pot calls are going to range anywhere from 15. If we go to Woodhaven, you know, we can get up to, And Woodhaven's a commercial call and probably one of the number one call makers out there. But you can get into the $180 mark on a pot call. Box calls, typical box call everybody's going to take out, again, probably $20 to $300, okay. Depending on what wood they are. Cool. That help you?
I was just curious.
And some of them, great question.
You know, some of those are you know, laminated and they're all different colors. And like Dorothy's husband, Harvey, made me some custom calls out of these really cool woods and stuff like that. So you can take it wherever you want.
Right.
I mean, you know, they're all going to make a noise like a turkey. And I'm sure you'll agree with me. Some of the worst sounds I've ever heard, I thought,
coming from the turkey.
Yeah, it's coming from the turkey. Yep. It's not a guy who doesn't know how to use the call. It's a turkey.
Yeah, I mean, I've got pretty much, you know, the last, I don't know, 8 years now, I carry a vest that I hunt with all the time. I mean, I got other ones in the truck if I need to go this, that, or that. But it's 100% custom calls made just for me. And most of them are Coca-Cola.
Nice. You know, and that's
just where I've gotten to.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you take it from one level to the next. It's kind of like when I started waterfowl hunting, I had cheap Flambeau decoys, and now I've got higher end Avian X decoys. It's just because I like it.
Right.
Exactly. And that's the way it should be. You know, if anybody tells you have to have this, you got to do this, you got to do that. No. Okay. Take everything that they tell you with a grain of salt. Like here, what we're talking about tonight, you don't have to do any of what we're talking about, but take the initiative to go out there and try some of this stuff and see what works and then make it your own.
I mean, just like deer hunting, I've gone to just hunting with guns I make.
Yeah.
It's just.
There you go.
It's what you do.
You keep challenging yourself to be better at what you do and what you like. All right. Well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up here on Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. All right, welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show. Got a couple minutes left here. Carl Lidke is my guest tonight. Carl, let's wrap it up with, you know, a lot of guys, and I started out being an early morning crack of dawn guy. I love that. I mean, I don't care what.
It's fun.
It's fun. But now that we can hunt all day long, don't give up the ghost at noon.
Oh, no, definitely not. No. Noon, 1 o'clock, 10 o'clock, noon, all of that is phenomenal. Really is. And then... Then the evening, I've had some great success, but I'll tell you, a lot of times they'll come in silent. They quit getting vocal and come in silent. They're there. They love to look around. They love to be nosy, but don't expect them to make a lot of noise.
Yeah, and that's just it. You have to be in a different game.
Yes.
You know, you can't be.
You got to go to your deer hunting game at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. It's more of an ambush type thing. They're going to be there.
Yeah.
You know, if you can find an area where my success in the afternoon has been, wherever there's a food source, those hens are going to go back and forth, back and forth, is particularly when they start to nest, because they come back and feed multiple times. So, and I think those toms know that, and they kind of go where those hen nesting areas are. They know where the girls are.
Right.
You know, but don't give up the ghost. And I've always lived by this opinion. If you can get a turkey to gobble from like 10 o'clock after, you should be able to kill him.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I'm not going to deny that one either.
You know, when he shuts up, then you really got to get ready. And I learned that lesson the hard way. It's like, oh, my God, he took off. You know, and then you think you know where he was, but he closed that 50 to 75 yards in about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And you get up, and there he is. You know, when they you got him going, and they're gobbling, and they stop, I'm telling you, you need to be ready.
Right.
You need to be ready because he's coming. Carl, great to see you.
Thank you.
Family's doing well?
Family's doing well.
That's awesome. Great to hear that. Thanks for jumping in here and helping me out. And good luck this turkey season.
Yeah, you too.
All right, thanks. Everybody, thank you for taking the time to tune us in tonight. And always remember, if you have the opportunity to impact somebody's life through the outdoors, take advantage of it. I guarantee you it will make you a better person. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Have a great evening and live life in the outdoors. Let's go.